Straight ahead, those new congressional maps pose tough choices for Texas Democrats. Congresswoman Julie Johnson's seat becomes heavily Republican. Mark Vesey's district moves to Dallas. So who will now run for what? A question we have for the Congresswoman. Republican State Rep. John McQueenie on the tense debate over those new maps, how personal it felt at times, and what kind of punishment he would support for the Democrats who broke quorum. Congressman Chip Roy, he's changing the Republican race for Texas Attorney General. And Dallas's new city manager defends her budget and eliminating positions, but does it really lower property taxes? Kimberly Beiser-Tolbert from her office at City Hall.
Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley starts now.
I'm Jason Whiteley. What a week in politics. We do begin, though, with some of the top political headlines you might have missed over the last few days. Congressman Chip Roy, he wants to be the next Texas Attorney General, and his candidacy immediately shakes up the Republican race for this position. Roy once worked for Paxton, then became a critic of him. Chip Roy is part of the House Freedom Caucus in D.C. He has even clashed with Trump on some issues and now joins Aaron Wrights and State Senators Mays Middleton and Joan Huffman in the Republican race for AG. Governor Greg Abbott wants the legislature to consider punishment for the Democrats who broke quorum. Abbott added that to the list of items that lawmakers can consider during the second special legislative session. The governor said he wants the legislature to, quote, ensure that rogue lawmakers cannot hijack the important business of Texas during a legislative session by fleeing the state, end quote. And we are watching to see whether there'll be any fallout in Tarrant County from that county cutting more than 100 voting locations. These cuts are for the constitutional amendments election in November. There were 330 voting locations. Now there will be 214. Commissioners say low turnout is the reason. The county anticipates these cuts will save more than $1 million. Let's begin right now, though, with the new congressional maps in Texas. Democrats face some tough choices. There are fewer congressional seats they can win in South Texas, in Austin, Houston, and DFW. Congresswoman Julie Johnson's seat is now heavy Republican. Mark Vesey's seat, it moves to Dallas. So who will now run for what? We begin this morning with the Congresswoman and what she had to say about that on a new episode of Y'allitics. Your district is now heavy Republican. It will be in these new maps here. Are you going to run again for 32?
I will be running for Congress. I haven't made a decision at this point exactly which seat I'm going to run for, but I'm taking a hard look at 33. The vast majority of my existing 32 district is in the new 33. And those are the question is, what is your district? Is it the number or is it the people you represent? And the vast amount of the people I represent in my current congressional seat are in the new congressional district 33.
Tell us the background here, because currently 33 is represented by Mark Vesey, an incumbent, also
correct,
a friend of yours.
Yes.
So do you talk to him?
I talk to Mark all the time.
Well, I know, but I mean, hey, I'm going to run for this seat. Are you running for it too? I mean, how does that work in the background?
You know, Mark and I are going to sort it out. You know, we both are good Democrats who recognize that there's more at stake than either one of our individual congressional seats. I do not see a situation where Mark and I primary each other.
That was my next question, whether you'd run against him.
I will not run against Mark Vesey. So, we'll see. We're just going to, you know, Mark and I will figure it out. We are grown adults who have a lot going on, who care about Democratic politics, who care about the future of our country. Neither one of us see the value in wasting millions of dollars on a contested primary for a congressional seat. It's more, what's going on right now is more than either one of us. We are grown adults and who are dear friends who respect the hell out of each other, and we will figure it out.
But voters will see you on a ballot in 26.
That is my expectation. Yeah.
What other options are there if it's not the Mark Vesey district?
Well, there's always 24. Beth Van Dyne seat. I've represented a significant portion of that in the state legislature. A good part of 32 got put into 24 as well.
Hers isn't as strong or as safe of a Republican district because they had to spread those voters out.
That's right. Her district is much more competitive. 24 is a much more competitive seat than the new 32. And it's more geographically compact. A good portion of it is in Dallas County. It's my strength of support is here in Dallas County.
When Governor Abbott signs these maps,
into law here. Do Democrats have any real legal steps they can take?
Well, in my opinion, it's a clear violation of the Voting Rights Act. I mean,
but that takes years to go through in court, doesn't it?
Well, maybe. You know, they've had a court case that's been pending for years that has proceeded through down in El Paso. The judge has the ability to issue an injunction and prohibit these maps from going into effect. That's certainly within their legal authority to do that. We'll see if they do or not, you know, and I think that was kind of another one of the processes was to get for the quorum break was to give enough time for lawyers to get the appropriate motions filed in court and let the judicial process cook a little bit. And that was another goal that they achieved. Yeah.
If President Trump helps broker an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, does he deserve a Nobel Peace Prize?
We covered a lot with the Congresswoman. This brand new episode of Y'all-a-Tix out right now. Language warning on this one, too, in case you have little ones around. You can still download this episode wherever you get your podcast, or you can watch it on our free Plus app that you can download right there on your smart TV. All right, let's bring in the roundtable now to talk about the politics of this. And my, is there a lot of politics? Bud Kennedy is here from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. I am Mitra Withers from the Texas Tribune, and Natalie Haddad, political reporter at WFAA in Dallas. Bud, let's start with you. What's going to happen with Julie Johnson and Mark Vesey? What do you expect to unfold here?
Well, you have three Democrats here. I think you have to see what does Jasmine do. If Jasmine considers, you know, running for, stepping up and running for Senate,
right,
which she's the second best known, most powerful Democrat in the state right now after Beto O'Rourke. If she decides to step up, then that leaves seats for the other two Democrats. If not, then either Julie or Mark Vesey might consider something else. Julie mentioned the Beth Van Dyne seat. She also might have considered District 6, but that has been redrawn during the interim when the Republicans strengthened some seats.
Sure.
They put Navarro County into Jake Elzey's district and made that stronger.
Do you expect anyone to sit out, though, in North Texas? We have Jasmine Crockett, Julie Johnson, Mark Vesey. Who sits out, if anybody?
Well, I don't think we know. I think we need to see first. Mm-hmm. I think Jasmine runs for her seat, and if everything falls into place, and I think then Julie's the one who has to find a chair. But it's a question in this musical chairs of who's going to leave her a chair.
And Ian, these legal cases take years to litigate, as you well know here. Do Democrats have a shot of stopping this in the courts?
Yeah, it's an open question. As Representative Johnson mentioned, legal action, the court case involving, the case over the 2020 redistricting was still kind of in court and was still to be resolved. So these are long, processes, too. And maybe there's a temporary restraining order, maybe not. They don't know. But it's going to be the legal process is going to be long and involved. And they've got to start planning for the election. So that's going to be a very difficult process.
Yeah, the clock is ticking here, too. But Natalie, when you zoom out here, how far does this set Texas Democrats back what Republicans have done here?
You know, a part of me believes that this is not going to be anything new to Texas Democrats. They
sure
have been on an uphill battle for more than three decades now. So I think more than anything, this isn't going to be a logistics thing for them. It's going to be almost an emotional thing. It's going to be, who am I going to run against? Am I going to run against them at all? What district am I going to choose this time? And what does that mean for my current colleague in Congress?
And fielding candidates, too, perhaps in the future, too. All right, guys, thanks for that. A lot more ahead here, including this.
When we come back, how will Texas Republicans punish the Democrats who broke quorum? Republican State Rep John McQueenie from Fort Worth is up next. And the first black woman to ever run Dallas City Hall, City Manager Kimberly Beiser-Tolbert defends her budget and her priorities when Inside Texas Politics returns.
Welcome back to Inside Texas Politics. This week, the legislature will likely consider whether to punish Democrats who broke quorum. That's the latest add to this second special legislative session. Our next guest is on the redistricting committee in the House, State Rep John McQueenie, a Republican from Fort Worth. Representative, welcome to the program. Governor Abbott's letting lawmakers consider punishment for the Democratic quorum breakers. Is this something you think that should be in statute, should be in law, or something the House should deal with rule changes?
I think everything should be on the table, Jason. I think that rule changes are necessary, but it maybe needs to be in statute. And I honestly don't think that the minority party should be able to stop the work of the government. So I'm in the camp of everything's on the table. I think that there are existing rules that we are going to need to enforce and enact. And I think we need to look at things moving forward so that we don't have this same problem in the future.
What kind of punishment would you support? I've heard everything from, you know, revoking parking spots to maybe some budgets to, you know, getting rid of vice chair positions. What would you support? What's on the table?
I think that the biggest thing that you're seeing a lot of support for that I also support is an impact to seniority, because seniority has so many different levels of importance. Committee assignments, it's going to start impacting Democrats if they have to lose seniority. So I'm a supporter of changing the rules, maybe statutorily changing the rules so that we handle that, so that seniority is impacted for people. If they're not here representing, they're not here working, they're not representing their constituents, they shouldn't be given the credit for doing so with their seniority ranking, in my opinion.
Debate on the congressional maps the other day, it got tense. It felt personal at times. Was it, in your opinion? Could you tell?
It was more personal than I thought it was going to be. This is my first experience with redistricting. I've gotten feedback from others that they said this wasn't as intense as it has been in the past. I think there's an element when you do a overall redistricting that impacts Texas districts, you know, for our seats as well as congressional districts, it gets a little bit more personal. So maybe that was part of it. Some of the feedback that we got from the other side of the aisle, though, certainly was personal. And I don't necessarily believe that it's all true. I think some of it was rhetoric. You know, the Democrats left the state when we were trying to work through this. You know, I think Texas leveled the playing field. The new maps that we approved and voted on yesterday, they add 5 Republican-leaning congressional seats. We believe that they're legal. We believe that they're fair. And it's candidly what other states have been doing. Other blue states have been doing this for decades, and Texas is leveling the playing field.
Democrats are threatening to take this to court, take the maps to court, looking perhaps for a TRO to stop these maps from actually being implemented here. Are you concerned that these might not be implemented by the March primary?
No, I'm not concerned about it. I think we did the process correctly. I think we followed it by the letter of the law. We were fair. I believe it's legal. The Supreme Court has given us the ability to do so. They've made it very clear that you can draw these maps based on partisan performance, and that's what was done. So, no, I am fully expecting a lawsuit. I assume it'll happen within the next couple of days once the bill gets signed into law. But am I concerned about it standing up in court? Absolutely not.
Representative, good to see you. I appreciate you making the time for us.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks a bunch, Jason.
All right, turning now to Dallas City Hall. Next month, City Council considers a brand new budget, $5.2 billion. This one eliminates some positions and it lowers the tax rate, but will it really reduce property taxes? Dia Wall sat down with the city manager, Kimberly Beiser-Tolbert, in her fourth floor office at Dallas City Hall.
Kim, welcome. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So you started at Dallas City Hall as an intern.
Yes.
What has the journey been like to go from an intern at City Hall to now the city manager, first Black woman to be city manager?
Yes, it's a full circle moment. I came into this building, into City Hall, over 30 years ago and was hired by the first woman city manager for the city of Dallas. And I smile because I know that this didn't happen overnight. That journey has not been a journey that has been all paved roads. There have been the bumps and the roadblocks. There have been the potholes. But it's been a journey that I would do all over again.
You are over the budget. The budget is your specialty. One of the biggest things you do, it is budget season.
Yes.
We got our first little sneak peek not too long ago. The budget you presented to council eliminates 282 positions, adds 277, most of them under the police department,
yes.
Right? You know the question that's coming.
Yes.
Who's going to lose their job?
Yes. It's not about adding new positions to the budget. I think in the past, adding positions did not necessarily solve problems. And we're trying to solve and address some of those unique challenges that we have. And so we do believe that even with some of those positions that are impacted in the budget, that there will be opportunities to move into some of those areas where we know vacancies still exist. Having the additional capacity in the police department, our residents have asked us to do that. And going forward, we will continue to challenge ourselves year over year and how we look at our positions, the ways that we need to make sure that we are delivering and we're bringing about the type of change that I know that this community is asking us. We've got to work smarter. We've got to utilize technology. And a lot of what you see in this budget is allowing for us to leverage those opportunities to get out of some of the manual processes. And so there's going to be those types of impact, but not to the detriment of the city.
another headline, Kim, is going to be the budget you presented.
Yes.
It lowers the tax rate.
Yeah.
But we know yesterday's price is never today's price,
that's right?
Right.
That's
so prices continue to go up.
That's right.
Will taxpayers, homeowners, see a decrease in that tax bill?
They'll see a decrease. Last year's decrease is a bigger one. But we also understood that as we balanced the budget, and because of the way the Senate Bill 2 was designed, we had to be under a certain cap on our reappraised value. And so we're actually under that cap. The cap is 3.5%. We're at 3.4%. So really, there was not an automatic reduction in the property tax that we had to take. But we still provided that because we believe that it's important to continue to provide that relief for our homeowners. So some, depending on the value of their property, might be a bigger one. Some, it might be, you know, more of a minimal decrease. But it is a way for us to continue to show that we're listening and we want to do everything that we can as we continue to work on the ways we deliver services. We want to do it in a way that when we can provide that relief, that we absolutely make that a part of what we include in our budget year over year. So I'm excited about it. I'll see what council does.
Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so very much for having me.
The roundtable is ready when we come back.
This is Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley.
All right, time now for Reporters Roundtable to put the headlines in perspective. Bud, Ian, and Natalie all back with us here. And Ian, let's start with you. Congressman Chip Roy announced he's running for Texas Attorney General. He likely has the highest name identification. How does his entry change the race?
I think that's exactly right in talking about name recognition. Recent polling showed, you know, up to 70% of potential voters may not know who's already in the race and not haven't identified with the candidate yet. And so Chip Roy certainly enters that, his name recognition is super strong. What's going to be interesting for Chip Roy is, of course, his history with Ken Paxton and even at times butting heads with President Trump, or at least not being on the same page. You know, does he get that Trump endorsement? That's going to be pretty key in this race.
And Natalie, this is already a crowded race with two state senators in there, Aaron Wrights, who worked for the DOJ and worked for Paxton, just like Chip Roy did.
Yeah, I think... To Ian's point, I think Chip Roy is going to have to really take advantage of the name recognition he has, especially, you know, he's butted heads with Paxton. Of course, we already know about that issue. And then President Trump, Chip Roy is known for not wanting to vote for these big spending bills. And so that has ruffled his feathers, surely. So I think Chip Roy is going to have to worry less about Paxton's thumb and more about the golden hand that President Trump seems to have. I think that's who he's going to have to really lean into to try and get ahead in this race.
Well, that's my next question, Bud. Then, did Chip Roy and Aaron Wrights, do they seek the same MAGA voter?
Well, Chip Roy has to somehow reach and win back some of the Paxton voters who don't like the fact that he was against Paxton, that he thought Paxton should step down.
Yeah.
I think that Joan Huffman will have a lot of the Cornyn voters. And so Chip Roy has to be able to win from both. Everything in this primary is going to be seen through Cornyn against Paxton. And all the way down the line is going to be, are you a Cornyn candidate or are you a Paxton candidate? Mm-hmm. And either you're for or against Ken Paxton. That's the way it's all going to be filtered.
And Ian, let's shift off and talk about the quorum break that the Democrats had. I think for the first time in all three of these, they actually got something done. 2003, they caved at the end. John Whitmire came back to Houston. We know what happened in 2021, but now the Democrats here have gotten California to actually take steps. What would you say, you know, that they actually got out of this then? They accomplished.
Yeah. The most obvious element of this is just kind of the national attention that they drew from their walkout. And it just resonated with a lot of Democrats and supporters across the country, and obviously California. I mean, it also set the stage too for some legal preparations too. They were talking with lawyers throughout this, and that helped, you know, kind of set the stage for the legal battle as well. So they can point to some wins, but also, you know, they came back to a state where Republicans were pretty united as well and pretty angry about the walkout.
Yeah, and Republicans clearly had the votes, and they won in the end, at least on this one here. But let's talk about the sleepover in the House chamber there. Nicole Collier, a Democrat from Fort Worth. Why was she the only one who did this?
I think it was spontaneous. I don't think that anyone else had thought of it.
She had two days, though.
But Nicole is a lawyer. She's chaired criminal justice. You know, I think that she looked at it. She had her suitcase. She'd just gotten back from traveling. And she didn't like the idea of having an escort everywhere she went. And all the other Democrats just thought, okay, well, I get to at least, you know, go home. But I think she just said, no, I'll stay right here.
And it made for a good moment, Natalie, but are you surprised nobody else joined in?
I'm surprised, you know, to Bud's point, actually, I think it's a don't know what you don't know kind of situation. Yeah. And I thought it was very telling when we saw representatives like Mahela Plaisa from Collin County rip up the permission slip and say, Nicole Collier was right. And so, you know, politicians are not one to stray away from a photo op. I do think it was much more than that, where they said, you know, this was something maybe we should have thought of too. And they joined her.
It seems like that indeed. But let me ask you about Tarrant County eliminating more than 100 voting locations here. This is for the November election. It's a low turnout election. But how does eliminating these locations help either party?
Well, this is a really tiny election. And so I'm not as upset about the number of election day seats boxes that I am about early voting. They tried to cut early voting. 4 years ago, they had 44 early voting boxes. They tried to cut it to 22. You know, there were only two boxes in all of central Fort Worth. There happened to be a lot of Democrats there, but they either had to go upstairs in the county office building or out to the office in these remote industrial park. It was a terrible situation. You know, fortunately, even the Republicans on the court, you know, Manny and Matt came in and put some of those voting places back in for people to vote early. Three-fourths of this election will be early vote.
And last thing, just a few seconds here. Is this a precursor to 26, do you think, what Tarrant County does with voting locations?
I think Tarrant County, we have a judge that wants to run on the fact that he's saving money.
Yeah.
He wanted to show that he was saving money, and he will continue to want to save money, even though there's nobody out there saying, gosh, I think we have too many places to vote.
All right, guys, thanks so much. We appreciate that. Thank you for watching as well. We're back again next week to take you inside Texas politics. We hope to see you then. Take care.